Welcome to the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast, a podcast bringing you news and views about sustainable agriculture from across the southeastern United States. Every show will feature insightful interviews and deep dives into sustainable agriculture topics with farmers, ranchers, land-grant universities, and local food system advocates. Now, here's your host, Brennan Washington.
Welcome to Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast. I hope everybody is doing all right out there in the age of COVID. Man, I've been trying to keep to a weekly schedule. It's been so hard with a lot of things that's going on with this virus, but a lot of voices need to be heard from. Today, we're going to hear from Dr. Patrick Halliday, a professor of agritourism and a president of the Georgia Coastal Agritourism Association. And tourism may be a strange thing to be talking about this time of the year during what we have going on. But as many farmers are noticing, the landscape has been changing for in terms of sales and what we're going to need to be able to do to survive in the future. And adding an income stream such as agritourism to your farm can be pretty important in the future. So in terms of trying to get the show out on a more regular basis, I think I'm just going to go with nixing any commentary before the interviews, just going straight into the interviews. And just staying in contact with you guys. So I hope everybody's being safe, practicing social distancing, and doing everything you need to do to get through this pandemic. So now, here's Dr. Patrick Halliday and agritourism. Welcome back to the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast. My guest today is Dr. Patrick Halliday, Assistant Professor of Tourism Management at Troy University and president of the Georgia Coast Travel Association. How you doing today, Patrick?
I'm great, Brennan. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks. We've picked an interesting time to do this, to cover this topic. Right.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I guess people will know something about what they can do on farm visits one of these days.
Yeah. And seeing how we have these huge travel bans now.
Yeah, it's tough.
What I figure is gives everybody time to sit down and plan what they want to do as far as agritourism on their farm, you know?
Yeah, both for visitors and for farmers who are thinking about it or doing it.
Mm-hmm. So, Patrick, what exactly is agritourism?
So, the short version is that it's agricultural tourism. So, we just took those two words and jammed them together. In the French, they call that a portmanteau, but we're not doing an SAT version today. So agricultural tourism. So it's when a farmer, a rancher, even aquaculture incorporates site visits, farm visits into their operations. So they create some sort of tour. It can run the gamut. And the idea is to create an extra revenue stream, another way to make money that helps supplement farm incomes of other types. It's kind of a value-added product.
Okay. And this is not really a new concept. Has this been around for a while? I know there's a lot of buzz around it now, but how old is the actual concept of agritourism?
Oh, you know, in time immemorial. I mean, people have always visited farms. It has grown, though. And I'd say in the last 20 years, particularly in the last 10 years, it's something that's become part of just even sort of the common language. More and more people just realize that you can go, especially, you know, I don't remember when, you know, Food Network started and Emerald was really big and all that stuff was maybe 20 years ago. And then even up to now, we're talking about all the buzzwords with sustainable and organic and farm to table and local. And people are just really interested in where their food comes from these days. Mm-hmm. And so farm visits are extremely popular.
In your opinion, why should a farmer consider looking at his farms for potential agritourism projects? I mean, what's the benefit to a farmer, first of all?
Well, so some of the benefits is you get to diversify your income, right? Mm-hmm. The very first thing that I ask anybody, a farmer, a rancher, somebody maybe doing aquaculture, maybe have crayfish or catfish ponds or whatever it may be. First of all, I say, are you a people person? If you're not a people person, don't do it, right? Mm-hmm. Because You not only have to have a farm, you have to have a visitor experience. The experience has to be good so that people will tell their friends and come back and that sort of thing. So, you know, you need to be a people person first and foremost. You also make sure that you have enough people to do the job, because we know that farming is 24/7, 365. And can you get away from your operation long enough? Or do you have somebody, do you have a family member, you have a wife, a cousin, a son, daughter, who could do that, you know, and are they a people person? So you get to diversify your income. You can increase your revenue without increasing your acreage. Use what you have. You can build new businesses using the resources you have, so you don't have to make any new investments or capital investments or anything like that. There's a couple other things that maybe complement the economic side of it, is that it's a way to have agricultural education. You can teach people about the heritage of your area or how different farming practices work. You get to be a steward of your natural resources. And it's a really great way. We know that the average age of a farmer in America right now is 59-60. So it's a really great way to have kids come out to the farm and educate them, get them interested in agriculture. And maybe that might be a career path. You know, so we have next generation of farmers. So those are all different things to consider.
Okay. The interesting thing is, aside from the income, is the preservation of culture and cultural history. And if I'm not mistaken, you just wrote a book around, just so our listeners know, you're located down in the Georgia Plains, right?
I live in Glenn County. I live on St. Simon's Island. And I just wrote a book on, it's called Gullah Geechee Heritage in the Golden Isles. Of course, the Golden Isles is the term we refer, you know, St. Simon's and Jekyll Island, places down here. And Gullah Geechee are a group of people who were enslaved mainly from West Africa because of their rice production skills. Mm-hmm. You know, slavery is evil, but even more evil when particular groups of people were targeted because of their skills. But they knew the tides. They knew how to use the moon for flooding. They knew all the engineering skills for building rice cultivation. So they were brought here. Mm-hmm. And then after the Civil War, the plantation owners and everybody else moved off of the islands. And so the Gullah Geechee people, as they're referred to, were pretty much left in isolation from slavery through the Civil War up until, you know, the early 1900s, when people started becoming interested in the islands, building bridges and things like that. So what happened was, they created their own culture, their own language, their own systems of doing things. And it's a really interesting, what we would call, quote unquote, indigenous culture of America that maybe a lot of people don't know about.
Right, right, right.
But really great agricultural traditions and mm-hmm. great fishermen.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, one of the things about the Gullah Geechee tradition is just the long history they have of fisheries, you know, guys like shrimpers and oystermen and that type of stuff. So let's say I'm a farmer and
Farmer.
Yes, I am, actually. I want to investigate agritourism, or I've heard this term agritourism. What would I do to go looking about seeing if my operation is viable for such an enterprise, and what are the things I need to be doing at startup, or look at least researching to see if it will be a viable enterprise for me?
Sure, sure. And I just wanted to tell your listeners that I'm not just an academic. I grew up working on my grandfather's 300-acre farm in Central Tennessee mm-hmm. for 20 years.
Yeah,
he had Hereford cattle was his main interest. And I actually have my own 32-acre farm in South Carolina, where it's mostly in a natural state right now. Got about a half-acre market garden, and I'm working on some agritourism development myself. So I have some inside knowledge, too, and not just the book mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
So what should you do if you want to think about, or if you even are, you know, these are more things that you want? Well, the number one thing that I tell everybody is you need to write a business plan. Mm-hmm. there's no way to succeed without a plan. So what's the old adage is, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. And there's some really great resources, you know, small business development centers. There's an organization, the Small Business Administration has an arm of it called SCORE, which is retired business people who help folks free of charge. You might be able to find a consultant or an academic. I write business plans for people or a friend. I also like the University of Minnesota Extension has an online platform. It's sort of, you type it in, plug in all these pieces, and it'll make the business, it's a template kind of.
That's Ag Plan, right?
Ag Plan. It's agplan.umn.edu. So University of Minnesota Extension. So what happens when you write a business plan is you actually figure out what your vision is, what do you want out of it, what is your service, what is your product, what is your resources, who's going to do the job, figure out the different ways that you can make income, from admission fees to sales to facility rentals. And it also starts some of the other questions like marketing, because, you know, if you build it, they will come is a joke. You know, if you don't market, you're not going to get anybody. It doesn't matter how much you do. So another thing, so business plan is essential. Another thing that you want to do is figure out what your ordinances are. You need to get in touch with your local zoning, because there's all kinds of restrictions. You know, some farms have conservation easements and all these different sorts of things. Or you might decide, okay, I have this space on my property that would be really good for an event venue, you know, maybe do weddings or something like that, but you can't build parking lots. So there's all kinds of different things like that. So business plan, marketing, contact your zoning, understand liability. The thing in Georgia is, you know, and probably people listen in different states, but here in Georgia, we're really agritourism friendly. So liability, the only thing you have to really do is, you know, Georgia Farm Bureau sells these. There's these signs that you post all around that says, they're basically say, you know, when you come on to this property, you're entering at your own risk. There's a lot more text on the sign than that, but that's basically what it is. And if you post those around in visible spots and somebody comes on your property, you know, of their own volition to visit, whatever, twist their ankle, whatever it may be, you're completely protected.
Okay.
So that's a good thing. The one more thing that I talk about from a business side is, if you do want to do agritourism on your farm, ranch, aquaculture site, and you're thinking about risk management and that liability, you put up the signs and everything like that, you might want to consider also having a waiver if you're doing an event. You can have people sign that. And then if your farm, and I hope a lot of these farms are created as LLCs, you know, to protect your assets, it's a really good idea to talk to your attorney and create a separate LLC for your agritourism venture, so that you have two separate businesses. Because if you have all of your assets wrapped up into one thing, and something were to happen and somebody were successful in their litigation, they couldn't get your farm assets. They could only get your agritourism assets, which are usually not, you know, as vital as, you know, all those. So a separate LLC is another good idea. So those are some of my biggest points.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is, in addition to just doing just your standard business planning, you know, what your market is, you know, what type of price points can you get, you really need to be thinking a lot about your legal structure, and because there's a lot of legal ramification involved in, I guess, having people come onto your farm.
There is. Like I said, Georgia is very good about protecting the farmer. All of the laws, and if anybody wants to write to me, I can send you the the laws and things like that. They're all written up into the from the Georgia legislature specific for agritourism, and they're all very favorable. But you do need your signs. You might want to do a waiver. You definitely want to know your zoning and your licensing. And yeah, that separate LLC is something really you should think about pretty hard. Okay. Just to protect yourself. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So for the sake of our listeners, why don't you talk about some of the interesting agritourism projects that you have seen, whether it be here in Georgia or anywhere in the South? So.
Sure. It's funny. This morning, I got an email from Karen Lawrence, who is down in Albany with the Southwest Georgia Project for Community Education, just reaching out to everybody saying, hi. We know that Daugherty County and Albany are pretty hard hit right now with everything that's going on. So one of the ones that I just recently wrapped up earlier this year, so just was a couple months, was with Southwest Georgia Project for Community Education, which is they have their base in Albany, Georgia. And it's an offshoot of Shirley Sherrod, Mrs. Sherrod from New Communities, who if you've studied civil rights and social justice, Mrs. Sherrod and her husband Charles were really active all through the years. But what was also true is that the USDA had systematic discrimination against people of color who were farmers for decades. And there was a big lawsuit started in the late 90s when it was finished as it went all the way up to the Supreme Court around 2009. And the litigation, the Supreme Court found in favor of all the black farmers. And so everybody who was part of that litigation and who could be tracked to have had discriminatory practices, lack of access to farms and resources, or lost their land, which is the case, the communities got big settlement, I mean, really big, millions of dollars each. And so the New Communities nonprofit group won a very big settlement. One of the things that they did is they bought a property that's called Resora. It's in the Albany area, it's in Daugherty County. It's over 1,600 acres. It's a former plantation. And it's a really interesting, you know, they talk about there that it's really interesting that what was once a plantation with enslaved people is now owned by the ancestors of those enslaved people. So that was a really cool twist. But what they're trying to do is the Southwest Georgia Project is an extension of that. And they work with socially disadvantaged farmers. They're working on accessible community-oriented food systems, opportunities to help underserved farms, and also sustainability and some social dimensions that we'll see in agriculture. So what they want to do is, so they work with 14 counties in Southwest Georgia. And so a lot of the socially disadvantaged farmers, you know, they have small land holdings, they're getting by, but they wanted other ways to make income. So that's where I got involved. I think you actually introduced me to some of them. I think that's how it actually started. And so we started developing an agritourism plan. And so what I wrote for Southwest Georgia Project was both a business plan, which I said, you know, is number one, and also a strategic plan, which is a 3-year plan for them. And what they want to do, this Resora place is just beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's like I said, it's 1,600 acres. It's got Satsuma orange citrus groves. It's got pecan groves. It's got an 80-acre lake. They've built cabins on it. There's a replica antebellum mansion, Civil War, you know, sort of style, even though it's, I think it was built in the 80s, but it looks like it. But it's a huge place, and it would be good for events and that sort of thing. So because there's so many farms, we visited 3 farms and talked about their readiness, and they're going to be part of the pilot project. And we're going to use, the idea is like I said, it's still in its inception. We just kicked this off from the beginning of the year, and now all this COVID stuff is happening. But the idea is if you know about a hub, right? So if you think about Atlanta Airport, it's the biggest airport hub in the world, right? Everything comes there. So it's the hub and spoke model. So everything comes there, and then it shoots out. Or you can even think about a food hub, you know, so that everybody brings their products there, and it's a distribution center that sends it out to other people. So since Resora is already completely visitor ready and is a big place and people can stay on it and all that, tourists would come to Resora, and then from Resora, they could learn about all of the other farms that are participating in this program across these 14 counties and have opportunities. So those are the spokes. You know, so all these places out there come to Resora, stay, then go out and see somebody else's farm, maybe somebody who has a farm practice that you're really interested in, vegetable farmer, or maybe they have ponds on their property that you can fish or bird watching. A quick aside, you know, we're talking about different types of agritourism. One that I just recently started talking to the guy about, it's in Alabama, a place called Joe Farm. It's a cattle farm, African-American owned. But the guy, the son, he's really into birding. And they have a lot of property. And it's a cattle ranch. And so there's birds everywhere because, you know, it's just pasture and forest and things. And what he did is he got in touch with his local chapter of the Audubon Society, which is in Birmingham. And one day said, hey, you know what? I like birding. Why don't you guys come out and see if this property is worthwhile for birding. So the chapter leadership came out, you know, two or three guys, and they loved it. It's all kinds of stuff. And then so they put out a call to their chapter and said, hey, we're going to do a birding tour on this date. And like 30, 40 people showed up. Wow. And then they did another one, and he had over 100 people show up. Wow. And so if you got some space, one of the places I went to in Albany, he had a great wetlands area on the side of his row crops. You know, he was doing kale and cabbage and all that kind of stuff. Then there was a little stag on the side with wetlands and forest. And he said he was thinking about building a trail through that kind of stuff. So anyway, that's one with the Southwest Georgia Project doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And just as an aside on that, that's an amazing story about Mr. and Mrs. Sherrod and their work with the Pickford settlement, helping so many Black farmers. Mm-hmm. The thing that always strikes me about that story is that they actually lost a significant piece of property, and they were working. I think they said that they had almost missed the deadline, not remembering that they would have farmers. Because sometimes I hear some people complain about the Pickford settlement. It was just a giveaway and stuff. But they actually did lose some significant land holding. So it was really nice to see it circle back. And they were able to get that land back in their family. So,
yeah, it's great what they got going on there. And they're, you know, two other things. They're thinking about creating an agritourism trail that connects to a civil rights trail. Mm-hmm. Now, the state of Georgia has some agritourism trails and some civil rights trails, but they wanted to maybe have some additions or some complements so that as you traveled around, because agriculture and civil rights are both pieces of heritage. So if you have a heritage trail, you can actually do both of those things at the same time. Speaking of trails, so here's another one that we got going on in the state. We all know about Georgia Grown, which is the extension of the Georgia Department of Agriculture, the branding for products that are created in our state. So in state, we have Georgia Grown Trails, which are agritourism trails. They're on state highways. There's four of them in the state. And the newest one is Georgia Grown Trail 17. So if you remember the old coastal highway 17 runs all the way down from the South Carolina border in Savannah down past St. Mary's to Florida. And so that was a resolution, and Jeff Jones, who's the district 167. He pushed that through. He lives on. And so what the idea is with these agritourism trails, and if you are a farmer, so again, the educational piece of this, if you're a farmer and you want to start an agritourism business, chances are you're not terribly far from one of these agritourism trails. Like the example of the Albany Highway 37 was the first one, and that goes right through a whole bunch of those properties, right? So the one for 17, it's the idea is to get people off of big Interstate 95, get people out into the more rural areas, you know, where they can experience, they can buy, maybe you stay in a bit. So talking about some different types of agritourism businesses, you know, like you pick. So if you have a strawberry field or something, or apple, you can have people come and pick the fruit themselves. It's a great afternoon outing for the family. And I tell the farmers all the time, I say, if you're doing this, I mean, it's great because you can give them a gallon basket for $10. They go out and pick their gallon of strawberries, and there's no way you're selling a gallon of strawberries for $10, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing. So you get a labor force and a great income by doing this. You pick, you know, or you stay in a bed and breakfast, or you go to a farm store, or you go fishing or hiking or birding or whatever. It's, you know, the different types of businesses only depend on your own creativity and the resources that you have. And another, just a quick aside, one, you know, when we were talking about do's and don'ts, one thing that I tell everybody when they're starting a business venture is don't spend money, right? Don't go get a loan. Don't start using credit cards. Don't ask friends and families for support or investors or anything. Just use what you have. You know, never take for granted what your day-to-day work is, you know, because people actually like to come out and watch you plow fields. They would, right? Or come and learn something, do a workshop. How do you grow cut flowers or something like that? Just what are you doing right now that doesn't cost any money for you really to push it out to the public? And don't discount the help you can get from your Chamber of Commerce for marketing and social media marketing is fantastic. So anyway, get if you are wanted, you can get in touch with Georgia Growing People. If you're on Highway 17, I'm actually on that board of directors, you know, so I can help you out with that. But there's the website is georgiagrowingtrails.com. If you go to georgiagrowingtrails.com, you can learn more about them and see the four different highways in the state. So that's another good resource.
Yeah. So the idea of a trail, these trails, Patrick, is that you have this stretch of road and all along it are these agritourism sites you can visit. Is that the general principle?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And if you go to that website, you go to one of the highways, 41 or 37 or whatever, there's a map. And on that map, there's all the little points that say, this is so-and-so's farm, and this is so-and-so's farm, and they have the place where it is on the road so that you can, if you're a visitor, somebody who's, you know, wants to do a driving trip, you can plan it out and see exactly where, you know, learn something about the farm and where it is and what their hours are and what you can do, all those different kinds of things.
Yeah. So, Patrick, can you talk a little bit about, you and I have had these conversations, but can you talk a little bit about how important it is, not only that you have your physical farm infrastructure there, but you have a story and that you could tell a story and build your brand and how important that is and what people should look at when they attempt to do that stuff?
Yeah. So this is, you know, agritourism is about the experience, right? So if you think about your favorite trip that you took anywhere, you don't necessarily remember all the minutiae, all the little details. What was the name of that restaurant? What was the street we're on? What was that building we're looking at? You remember the feeling, right? You remember that feeling when you come home, you're like, man, that was great. I had to tell my friends, you got to go to Patrick's farm. They were so nice. You know, we learned, we tasted some tasty things, you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, when you write a business plan and a marketing plan, which is a companion to that, there's some components to it. So one of them is a vision statement, which is a really short, our farm is dot, dot, dot. And it's basically just the short version of what you want to tell the world about who you are. And then you also have a mission statement, which is more fleshed out. This is what we do, and this is how we do it, and this is why it's important to us, and this is why we want to share it with you. And what those two things help you create are our brand and image. So branding and image are great. We all know what the Nike swoop looks like. We all know about the red Coca-Cola, you know, all those different things. That's a brand. And we know about them because of logos. So you could even create a logo for your farm, you know, whatever components of your farmers are really important to you. So that's all part of branding, is creating that image, that experience. Why do you want to do it, right? So the number one thing for that piece is don't jump into this because you want to make money, right? Get into it because you have a story to tell, or there's something you're passionate about. Why is your farm important? What practice are you doing on your farm that you want to educate people about? What do you want to share? And what's the history of the place to you? And what's that story? You know, all of that is branding and imaging. Yeah. It's about passion. It's about getting a story, just like you said. Definitely.
Yeah. Another thing you and I have discussed about agritourism is this: you do decide to establish some sort of agritourism at your farm or your whatever your business is, that you should sort of stack like your enterprises. And one thing you and I have talked about is that you should always have some value-added products to sell.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So what are you doing on your farm? Maybe you have row crops, whatever, but you also have bees, right? So it's good to have pollinators around when you're growing vegetables. Mm-hmm. So maybe you are bottling that honey. You've already got a farm brand. You got a sticker on that honey. You know, this is the Brandon Washington super honey, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're doing agritourism, it's a value-added product unto itself. But what you want to do is that when people come there, you got to have a place for them to get their hands on your products, right? So you might have a farm store. You might just sell it to them. You might just have it available. So anything that you're doing on your farm also need to have a way to get it into the visitor's hands to get there. So that's doubling down and stacking your revenue streams, because you're having visitors coming there and they're purchasing whatever products that you're creating.
Okay. Going back to those agricultural trails real quick, that's not something that's just unique to Georgia. They have them in other states, don't they?
No. Yeah. No, it's not Georgia. No, okay. They have them all over the place. And the thing is that it's becoming even more, there are even more niches within it. So we have these four agritourism trails, but also in Georgia, we have wine trails, the barbecue trails, beer and spirits trails. And these things are all over the place, all over the country, right? So you can, if you are a producer, you can have and be a piece of an agritourism trail, but you can also be a piece of a specialty trail, you know, right? If you raise hogs, how come you can't be a component of the barbecue trail?
Gotcha.
You know, or if you have a dairy and you create cheese, you can connect it to the wine trail.
Okay.
You know, there's just have to be super creative about all these, but they exist, right? So nobody needs to go out and try to build any of these things. Just do a little research, talk to people in your local institutions of higher education. There's colleges and universities all over the place. And they have professors in tourism and agriculture and those sorts of things who glad to help you out. Of course, get to your extension agents and other organizations. You know, Sarah, you guys do all kinds of great things, workshops and that sort of stuff. So.
Yeah. A really good example, Patrick, I think, if you can talk about it a little bit, for someone trying to consider looking at a project and how to put the different components together, is the project you're about to work on in Puerto Rico, because that's almost like a from the ground up type of project that you're doing. So would you mind talking about that project a little bit, what, how it got started and what you guys are attempting to do down there?
Sure, absolutely. So it's an agritourism project in Puerto Rico, like you mentioned. There's a, in the central mountain regions, there's a municipality, I guess sort of think about it like a county with a city, but it's all called Utuado. Utuado is the central mountain region. So in September of 2017, we remember that Hurricane Maria came, created some pretty significant devastation. It hit Puerto Rico full force. And what happened was the response for the communities in Utuado after the hurricane, it was took 42 days for federal emergency help to get to those municipalities. And what they also felt is that they had often been forgotten or left behind or marginalized out there because they're pretty remote. And so what it did is it spurred them to self-reliance. They said, well, you know what, if we can't get any FEMA help, we can't get any Puerto Rico government, you know, the governor's not sending anybody out here, we're going to do it all ourselves. So they banded together. There's a nonprofit organization that's called CASAO, which is an acronym for Spanish, but roughly means Community Organization for Socioeconomic Development and Health. And they banded together, pulled their local resources. They rebuilt a bridge and an aqueduct. They built a community health center, which is state of the art. It's all solar powered. It's on wells. It's got not just a clinic and a pharmacy, but it's also got a dentist office and physical therapy rooms, and all this kind of stuff. And they started a community gardens and agricultural education in the primary schools, doing all this stuff. And, you know, really fast compared to how it would have happened from an agency. And then, so one of the other things is that they had coffee farms, you know, because it's mountainous and coffee grows on slopes, and it was a good region for that. It was a good climate for that. But a coffee plant takes 7 years to reach maturity to be harvested to get the bean. So that's a long time. So they were thinking about new ways to rehabilitate these farms that had basically just been all destroyed from the hurricane. And one of the things was agritourism. So we started doing that. I was introduced to the project. A friend of mine, we went to grad school together at Clemson. His name is Keenan Adams. He was the director of the Department of Interior's Cultural and Natural Resources team. And now he's the director of El Yunque National Forest in Puerto Rico near San Juan. And he had posted, this is the power of social media. Actually, how you and I started talking about this too is, he posted something on his Facebook page about this community and how they're really interested in connecting agriculture, tourism, and resilience. And I was like, hey, I do all those things. So he said, all right, come on. And so I went down there just in the spring. So I'd only been like 6 months since the hurricane of 2018. And I started working with them. I wrote them a business plan. They had an old coffee roasting facility built in the 1960s. That they're thinking about turning into a visitor center. So again, it'd be sort of this hub and spoke model, getting their farmers involved. And so we started that strategic plan and business plan. And then a little time went by and our common friend, you know, I was there for, and I was working on, I was down there for like a month, met all the farmers, did all the things, and then came back to the States. And our, common friend John Jackson, who runs Comfort Farms out of Milledgeville, which a lot of people might be familiar because they do so much work for veterans. He had been down there at in a completely different part of Puerto Rico, connecting with some farmers. He posted something on Facebook, and then you posted something to John's post that said, "Hey, I need to connect with some more farmers down there in Puerto Rico." And I commented, "I know some farmers down there in Puerto Rico." And so fast forward to the next year. So this was 2017 and 2018. And then you and I and a couple other colleagues in 2019 were down there and went to Utuado, did some of these community meetings, more visioning with the farmers, more talk about sustainable agriculture and how that connects to tourism, how that could be a factor for this community self-reliance and bringing in incomes, education, food security, and all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And it went really well, you know, with our Pablo Mendez Lazaro at University of Puerto Rico is one of our partners, Katja Brunders at Arizona State University is one of our partners. And when we got back, you suggested that we apply for the Sustainable Agriculture and Research and Education Program grant, Sustainable Agricultural Grant. And so we did. And it was, you know, you guys were awesome there at SARE. It was a big process. It's a big proposal, and it's $300,000 to continue this work for the next 3 years, 2020 to 2023. And we won it. So what happened from just me going down there to see if I couldn't help out with some community people and you come in and just built. So long story short is they didn't have any resources. They just had ideas. And they're killing it. And I'll tell you some stories just since we were there. It hasn't even been a year. So we have four cooperating farmers in the project, in the pilot project, along with the nonprofit group there and some other stakeholders and Puerto Rico Tourism Company, which is a state agency, and University of Puerto Rico Sustainable Ag and Extension folks. But our four cooperating farmers at the property, one has a pretty large acreage, over 100, does citrus, but he also has sheep, which were originally, you know, for keeping the grass down, and sort of bush hog. But he is absolutely crushing it in lamb sales right now.
Oh, wow.
So that was Juan. And then we had another guy who was taking breadfruit, wild breadfruit. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to grow it because breadfruit grows everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you can just take it. You know, it's community, public property, basically. Mm-hmm. But he has this amazing sustainable operation for turning breadfruit into flour.
So he's
really good at packaging and marketing. Mm-hmm. He's put together a really good team, and they make breadfruit flour for waffles and pancakes. Waffle and pancake mix is their main product. And since we were there, I remember we just talked to him, and he was like, "I got this idea." He's in every supermarket in Puerto Rico.
Right? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he's also been certified as a sustainable tourism site by the Puerto Rico Tourism Company. So he was the first farmer there. And that just basically is a certification so that a visitor says, "Hey, I want to go to some place." If you have the certification, that just says that you're doing all of the best practices. And this is a place that people really want. The two others, so we have the sheep farmer and we have the breadfruit flour producer. The other guy, he's a viticulturalist, so he's really working outside of the box because that Puerto Rico, first of all, you don't really grow grapes. And he's trying all kinds of varietals, and he's also trying native fruits, you know, to try mm-hmm. to make them in spirits. And he's doing great. He's bottling wine now. He's got a cafe on his property where with a pizza oven, he does, he grills out meat and has pizza and wine tastings and has groups already coming touring. I've seen pictures of it.
Wow. And that's been all since we've been out there? Wow.
Yeah, it's not even here. I'm telling you, these people are driven. And, you know, that's what it takes a lot of times for your listeners. Just, you know, if you have an idea, if you can get some support, try to run with it. They're not investing. These people don't trust the government. Anything. They're not going after anybody's money. They're just, what do we got? How can we use it? And really pushing it. So what this whole project is really about how agritourism can improve quality of life, create some socioeconomic development, and impact agricultural sustainability. So all of these things with some really great farmers who are pretty driven in an area that was absolutely devastated by Hurricane Maria. So
Yeah. And I think one of the crown jewels was just that amazing, unique coffee roasting plant they had there.
Too bad we don't have a visual, but the thing is huge. I mean, it had to be 10 or 12,000 square feet. It was really big. It was a big metal building that until the 70s, because like I said, this area was traditionally, and coffee is a heritage food in Puerto Rico. They grew some great coffee plants. So this was all coffee farms. There were 40 coffee farms around that area. And since, you know, the hurricane knocked some out, but there was also, you know, there's generational issues that we have everywhere. Younger people were moving away. So some of the farms were abandoned. And then the coffee roasting facility itself was not used anymore, because the Department of Ag in Puerto Rico, as one of their services, started roasting it for farmers themselves. So they had, Department of Ag had its own roasting facilities, which were more up to date and modern. So people started taking their coffee there. But yeah, this big, if you want to, in your mind's eye, imagine a giant three-story 12,000 square foot metal building that you go inside of, and all of the working pieces are still there. You know, it's very industrial looking, and the idea is to completely renovate it, make it into a heritage museum where all this industrial inner workings can be part of the interpretation, tell the story so people can see how coffee's roasted, and then have a cafe. There's a big balcony on the outside. It was just a landing on the outside. We turn them with a great view of the mountains. It would be a gorgeous, gorgeous facility for a visitor center and heritage museum is what they want to do.
Okay. So I'd like to turn back a little bit to risk management for a few minutes, Patrick. Sure. So we've talked about the importance of getting your legal structure right. Insurance.
Yeah, definitely.
We can get the signs from the Georgia Agritourism, but is it smart just not to depend on just that?
Definitely. You want to talk to, I hope your farmers and your ranchers, everybody out there already has some form of insurance. And so, you know, just go to the people that you're already working with and talk to them about what you're doing with agritourism, and you can get some extra insurance on that. There are some companies that do agritourism insurance by themselves. I'm not going to promote any particular one, but yeah, talk to your insurance agent, tell them what you're doing, and they should be able to give you some good advice on what you need to do there.
Okay. So since you have your thumb really on the pulse of this type of work, how bad is COVID affecting tourism destinations, and what's your prognosis? Is it crushing them?
Yeah, trillions. It's not billions, it's trillions. Everybody's underwater. It's going to take a long time for you know, hotels, restaurants, airlines, cruise ships, you name it, everybody's losing money. And not a little bit of money, but 80, 90% of what they would normally make is gone. And I think that... And even you know, when all the countries start saying we think we have it under control, or, you know, in a year there's a vaccine and it's safe, you can travel, go anywhere you want to, I still think there's going to be a large portion of the travel community who's going to say, I don't know about that. I think it's going to take a while for people to start doing some of the things that they were doing. And I actually think there is an opportunity, some fundamental shifts in just the way that people travel or consume experiences. It may have some really long-term impacts on travel between states, international travel. You know, people may be leery of going to airports and places like that. But yeah, I think the current estimate is $10 trillion.
Wow. What's the landscape down there in Glynn County?
Well, we typically get 2.5 million visitors a year, and 21 and $1.5 billion in tourism revenue. Mm-hmm. We're the third biggest destination after Atlanta and Savannah because of St. Simon. Okay. Georgia doesn't have a lot of beaches, a lot mm-hmm. of public beaches. Mm-hmm. Tybee Island up in Savannah and St. Simon's Island are just about it. So we'll get 30,000 visitors a day in the summer. But yeah, there's a lot of loss. Everything's shuttered. There's no money coming in. I'll have to look at it after the fact, you know, we can crunch some of the numbers and things like that. But because of some of Governor Kemp's decision, mm-hmm. Like him or don't like him, mm-hmm. I'm not going to get political. he did open the beaches. Mm-hmm. Our local county commissioners closed the beaches, mm-hmm. and they closed short-term rentals. But then Kemp came around like a week later and said, no, we're going to open them all. Mm-hmm. So what we still have here are not the same volume, but we do have out-of-towners. I see them pretty regularly, mm-hmm. you know, because they're tired of being at home. They can get a beach house rental here and go to the beach. Now, you can't lounge on the beach. It's exercise only, but mm-hmm. you know, people are still doing it. So, no, we're like everybody else. A lot of businesses are going to close.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame, whatever. You know, going back to your statement about this may change the way people's perception of travel changes. You know, we're seeing that with agriculture too now. I thought many farmers would be pulling their hair out because of loss of sales and potential loss of markets. But what anecdotally, what we're seeing as people now looking at where can I get local food and where can I get my farmers? And I think some of the stuff will happen with travel, you know, maybe just hop in a car and go somewhere. And
I think that's what it's going to, it's one of the thing. One of the ideas that I had is like, we have to stop thinking globally for travel, more regionally. Mm-hmm. And yeah, anecdotally, like I'm friends with tons of farmers, you know, I do a lot of agritourism stuff. Mm-hmm. And they all had to shift, you know, from restaurants to direct to consumer. Mm-hmm. And the ones that I'm talking to, the ones that I buy from, mm-hmm. they're like, wow, I could never have known mm-hmm. that I would do this well. Mm-hmm. You know, that people are, you know, driving to the movie theater parking lot and getting their chickens and stuff out of the back of the truck. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I think there could be a really, really interesting fundamental shift in the way that local food systems operate.
Yeah.
And there may be a change from food systems that are thinking about economic growth and they're mm-hmm. thinking about distribution instead. Mm-hmm. And then the last thought on that to tie it to agritourism is that there's this dairy in South Carolina that's been selling for 75 years mm-hmm. and they never sold to a customer. They only sold. And then they just opened up their warehouse door, you know, the big sliding door mm-hmm. and said, just pull up and we'll sell it right to you. And then they're like, we never even thought to sell it to somebody mm-hmm. in 75 years. And now they're just selling tons of milk and people's consciousness, like people who just rely on supermarkets is mm-hmm. changing because they're going, oh, wait a minute. I got a whole bunch of people around me mm-hmm. that are doing these things from meat sales to vegetable sales to honey, mushrooms, whatever it may be, soaps and things like that. And I think we can couple that, hopefully, as people are becoming more aware with their local food system, their farmers and their other food producers, that then if you want to start an agritourism venture because you're developing this deeper relationship right now because of this crisis, it might be a good time to think about that. If you are a farmer right now who's seen an increase in your direct consumer sales and you're building these relationships, you might want to start to think that, hey, you know, 6 months down the road when hopefully everything's all clear, I can be doing farm events. Mm-hmm. I can have visitors come out. They can see what I actually do.
Yeah.
And you can sell it right on your farm. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to drive out and sell it out of your truck.
Yeah. And, you know, like up here, you know, we're up above Atlanta, but there's a lot of little small farms. What I'm also seeing is farmers who were sort of in their own little silos are starting to work together. But once again, we could start to share events or have farm to table type events at each of our farms and that type of stuff, or even tours. I know some folks who have always been interested in urban ag. You can even do a little urban ag circuit ride through Atlanta or some of our urban areas. So, Patrick, I want to thank you. I know it killed you to take some time off making all that good food you'd be posting on Facebook. Yeah. I said, why does this guy ever work? He's always cooking something.
That's right, because I got good farmer friends.
But I want to want you to just take a few minutes and let people know how they could get in touch with you.
Sure. You know, we're all sort of stay at home right now. So the best way to get a hold of me is my email. Mm-hmm. I check it probably 20 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's PHOLLADAY at Troy, TROY.EDU. It's my work email. I answer that pretty quick. You know, down the road, if somebody has a question, you know, I think maybe things get back to normal a while. My office phone is 912-262-2511, but I'm not sure when I'll be answering that again. But again, email pholiday@troy.edu. I'll be glad to answer any questions, help out, or send a resource or whatever. And I'm free.
All right, you're going to get a lot of calls now. And the name of your book again and how people can get it?
Yeah, Gullah Geechee Heritage and the Golden Isles. Gullah Geechee Heritage and the Golden Isles. Easiest ways, they got it on Amazon.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you. I want to have you on again to talk more about these issues. And hopefully by the next time you and I always talk on Facebook, but hopefully this cloud arise over us pretty soon and we can get back to seeing all these great little local tourist destinations and getting these experiences. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you for being a guest on the show today, Patrick. Sure. And hopefully I see you've been getting out. You've been able to get to the beach and stuff. So
no, I actually avoid the beach, but I'm doing some things around, you know, getting some exercise in the parks and things like that. You know?
Yeah. I developed a cough and actually had to go to the doctor this morning. I've had a long standing lung issue, but I just got a little bit concerned about the cough. So they're going to say, oh, you just self quarantine now for your wife. And I've got to go get a COVID test in about a week. So, but thanks for being on the show, man.
Hey, I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me, Brennan.
Thank you for listening to the Sustainable Ag Writer podcast. Please visit our website at sustainableagwriter.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Please tell your friends and colleagues about the show and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Once again, thank you for listening to the Sustainable Ag Writer podcast, sustainable ag news and views.